RPG lessons learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. Find us online at rpgllpodcast.com. Email us at rpgllpodcast@gmail.com. And find us on Blue Sky at rpgll.
Hi, welcome to RPG Lessons Learned, the show where you can learn from our mistakes. This is Dusty. With me, as always, is Tanner. Hi, Tanner.
Hey, Dusty. How's it been?
It's been great. We have literally just, not 30 seconds ago, finished our third and final game in Mutants and Masterminds, and we were like, oh my god, forget notes. Let's just record, because I have so many thoughts, I think you have so many thoughts, and we wanted to just get those down and record those. We have no notes in front of us. We just finished playing. How do you want to do this? Do you want to share your thoughts first?
Yeah, well, let me just start by saying I think it was good. I think we both have some thoughts about how stuff went and maybe stuff that kind of the prep got blown through really fast. I had a good time. I thought the story was good. We had good cinematic moments. I thought your structure was good. So
I think it was a satisfying third act to me.
100%. So whatever we say about the system or our time with it, I don't want that to color, make you think that I didn't have a great time, because I did.
It was very, speaking of third act, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
None of the problems ever seemed difficult, despite me working very hard to make them difficult. Like Return of the Jedi, you blew past the shuttle scene where you give the code. You blew past encountering the Ewoks and befriending them. You blew past setting the explosives. Like, people at home, don't get confused. We were not playing Star Wars. We were not playing Return of the Jedi. I'm just saying, all the challenges that you had to get through to get in this office building, you blew past every one of them. Now, like Return of the Jedi, I think it was satisfying, but we played the game in like an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah. So just so the people listening along can understand, my character, Iceflow, who kind of defected to the Carnival of Crime at the end of session two, joined the Carnival of Crime in their heist to take down the Ark Corporation and its leader, who we thought to be the criminal kingpin named Chess. So our story here for session three was me kind of infiltrating the tower, making it to the top. And then ultimately, what ended up happening is me letting Max, Maestro Max, kill Chess. Arguably maybe a rival supervillain, but obviously I had my good reasons to let him do that. So just to provide some framework. So when we talk about the encounters and the challenges, we're talking about the challenges I made going up the tower for those following along. So you specifically said that you wanted to make this more difficult because you don't feel like you got combat right. And halfway through the session, you said, Tanner, by God, I still don't think I got the combat right. Now, I want to defend you in this. One, we're playing one-on-one. It's going to be swingy. Every encounter is going to end with me blasting a guy or dying. Straight up. Number two, I'm playing a glass cannon. My whole thing is that I either blow guys up or I die. So I want those two things to kind of color what you're thinking in terms of I didn't get the combat right. I'm playing a character that blasts first and asks questions later, can't take a hit, and we're playing one-on-one. So give yourself some grace before you say what you have to say.
Fair enough. I will take that grace. And there were a few moments where if you had rolled worse on your toughness, that would have been it. So for all that I feel like you were never challenged, you were one bad roll away from being incapacitated, I think twice.
Yeah.
Once with the rook, and then again with the queen.
Yep.
The knights were no problem. You intimidated the guards, so you like completely walked away from a fight. You bypassed a skill challenge with a clever key card thing, which I'm good with you bypassing content. Like, you asked me, does it bother you that I'm bypassing content? And I'm like, no, that's why we play. If I wanted you to go through all the content, like, there's whole scenes we didn't do. I had a whole role play thing where you could come in as a shareholder. I had another way you could get in by assaulting a helipad. There's like whole sections of stuff. I had a fun role play encounter with an AI that the name of the encounter is Secure GPT. There's a bunch of stuff that we just didn't do, and I'm okay with that. That's why we play.
Right. I think that used to break my heart as a GM when I was new, and maybe not new, when I was bad in intermediate, because I was a bad GM for a lot longer than I was a new GM, if that makes sense. And that was the one thing that always just totally took the energy out of me, is preparing three options and the players do one of them, and then I wasted my 2/3 of my time. And I don't have that attitude anymore, and I don't try to prep like that anymore. But you very specifically, and I appreciate this meta discussion, it was interesting. You're like, I have three options at kind of each level of security for you to go through. And you drafted that knowing that I would pick one and
yes,
and mm-hmm. not do the other two. So do you also have that aversion, or is that something you've worked through, or is that just totally not bother you? Having encounters that just go totally unused.
Me starting playing role-playing games was very colored by a conversation that I had with Martin, the GM that I've discussed in the past, where he talked about, look, players are going to be players, and if you don't let them be players, don't play the game.
Yep.
So I have been very comfortable letting go of prep to favor play since the very beginning. I'm a huge believer in let the players be players.
I wonder if that's also colored by the fact that, I mean, it's not, we've talked before about Martin. It sounds like he's an awesome GM. I think we spent last episode just saying that for about 35 minutes. But I wonder, too, I started playing D&D when I was 13 or 14. I wonder if it's just, and you started playing as well into your adulthood, you know, so I wonder if that's part of it, too. I don't know. Maybe you got to skip all the ugly lumps that I had to go through in terms of becoming a good GM.
Maybe, and maybe also, I've talked about how I love role-playing games for coming up with stories that may not have a perfect three-act structure, that may not have a perfect rising action and falling action. I love how broken and weird an RPG story can appear at the table, because I'm tired of all the design by committee, storytell by committee movies and books that we get, and this is a way to rebel against that, and I love that rebellion.
Yeah, it's scrappy, right? It's like anything can happen, and that's why we play. And yeah, so as far as skipping content, I'm glad we're both... I just didn't want to feel like I was putting you in an uncomfortable spot, but I'm glad to hear that you're totally cool with it.
Let's talk about the system, and we talked about combat before. Maybe we'll skip over some of that, maybe we'll come back to it. But I do want to talk about two things that I grafted onto the system. One that I've been continually using, the luck roll. I think that Mutants and Masterminds, by and large, lacks a random encounter roll. And I wanted this idea of, like, in this heist, I had inserted moments where you'd make a luck roll to see, does this thing spot you or not? Mm-hmm. You make a luck roll, do you have an unlucky encounter with security guards in the hallway or not? Make a luck roll, you know, the knights were wandering monsters. Do you have an unlucky encounter? Like, I had to graft this luck roll mechanic on to Mutants and Masterminds. Are you okay with that, or are you annoyed by all the luck rolls that we've done? And I should clarify for the audience, a luck roll, this game is very D20 based. It's literally evens and odds. Evens is good luck, odds is bad luck. But Tanner.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I agree that your reliance on it speaks to something about the system not providing you a tool that you need, and you invented your own. I don't think it's a bad way to do it, but it's almost like it's this procedure that the game doesn't have that the games that we like to play do, of like a thief has a 2 in 6 chance of spotting a hidden door, something like that, right? Where it's like, if the game didn't tell you that, would we be just rolling? When we play old school dungeons, would we just be doing luck rolls if we didn't have the other tools we had? I think so. Maybe. I mean, it always felt tense and cinematic. I would much prefer it. There's no skill of, did you accidentally get spotted by this thing rounding the corner? You know, like, if I was hiding from something, sure, I'd make a stealth roll. Or if I was trying to find something, I'd make an investigation or perception. But, like, the things we were using it for, I feel like were skill checks that don't exist. And we were just flipping a coin.
I'm having this realization that the world's best D&D Dungeon Master and the world's best Mutants and Minds Game Master would be two very different people employing very different skills.
I agree.
And I think Mutants and Masterminds is much more of a, you as a game master are, in a way that maybe you and I are not comfortable with, you are telling your own story.
Yeah.
You are dictating. I mean, there's no concept of a dungeon.
Right.
So you're literally, as the game master, I can come up with, you know, 10 obstacles and have you run through obstacles 1 through 10. and there would not be any branching or idea of going this path instead of that path. It just, it feels like the game is designed to be more linear, with the game master having a lot more to say about what you encounter.
And listen, me and you first got together and started talking because of my love for Legend of the Five Rings, which I consider to be a very narrative, very GM authority heavy game. I love telling linear three act structures in that. I know that you reject and you rebel against them, but like, I love trying to create a three act story in L5R. And I operated in that mode for many, many years, and it wasn't until I discovered kind of old school gaming that was turned on its head for me, and I'm much more interested in creating situations open-ended and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I was that GM for a long, long time, and you're right. They are two different skills. And you know what? You're a person, and you're a person with your experiences, and knowing what you know, it's like you can't not bring in stuff that you learned from old school dungeon crawling games into this kind of game. Like, you can't segregate your mind like that. Nobody can. So
fair.
Don't feel bad about it.
Elephant in the room, call me out. Two questions. First question, what did I need to learn as a GM from learning Mutants and Masterminds that I have learned over the course of the four games that we've played, the introductory game plus these three Carnival of Crime games? What did I need to learn that I did learn? And what did I need to learn that I still haven't learned?
What you learned well was that you let me take this in the direction I wanted to for Act 3. We talked about it last time that this was not your plan for the Act 3, but as soon as I signed on with Maestro Max, you were pretty thrilled. And you let that, for a three-act structure, you let me decide what Act 3 was. In a roundabout way, right? So big thumbs up to that. You're not running it as railroady as you think you are if you let a player completely decide what kind of allies they're going to have and all that stuff. Things that I thought were weak this session, you immediately opened up by explaining the meta discussion of what I would be doing. Mm-hmm. And you said, Tanner, you're going to be infiltrating this tower. It's going to be four levels of security. You're going to be able to choose your path as you go up. And I might say, hey, this is a social challenge. This is a skill challenge. This is a combat challenge. You did all of that before we even got into the narrative of the session. And I think it felt almost like I was picking an XCOM mission or something like that, than it was like me being grounded in the fiction. Like, it wasn't Maestro Max that was presenting this to me. It was you, Dusty, presenting it to me. And I had to ask you a couple times, like, can you like paint a word picture of what this building like looks like? What time of day is? Like, I think you ran right into the mechanics of it and didn't do a ton of narrative table setting for it.
You're right. This is me taking your feedback. This is not me resisting it.
Yeah.
But here's why. I was so excited by the hero point tag someone else in to help you heist mechanic that I grafted on, that I was eager to get into the mechanical discussion with you and tell you, hey, we're running a heist in Mutants and Masterminds. It's not a heist-based game. It's not Blades in the Dark. So here are my heist mechanics, and here is the heist structure. I was so eager to do that. You're right. I should have gone more for the suspension of disbelief and fiction. I was talking to you as a fellow GM and not as my player, which is where I failed.
Yes, maybe like that. And like I said, that was the first 5 minutes of a pretty great session. So I would just try to like think about it in terms of, yeah, you know, it's a GM player dynamic. It's a different dynamic than GM to GM dynamic. And I appreciated you outlining that to me, because I instantly knew what tools I had, what my objective was, what my options were, and all that was awesome. But I was here to be the player, and not until we kind of got into the second or third challenge did I really feel like I could imagine the world in which my character was existing and what I was doing.
That's good feedback. That's really good feedback.
Yeah. And I don't often have really good feedback for you, unfortunately. So I would just try to, like, obviously meta discussions need to happen. And I think you and I are both very pro meta discussion. We've talked about that before. But it's always good to separate those worlds, is to say, hey, metagame, if you do this, it's probably going to end up like this. If you do this, it's probably going to end up like this. Okay. Now that you know that, let's get back into the fiction of what's going on and making sure that those are worlds that we're bouncing between and not blending.
You know what I'm excited by to move into a positive? I'm not trying to leave that behind. Like, I fully take that feedback. That's great feedback. Moving into a positive note, I feel like I would want to, I'm not saying we play more. I don't want to run these adventures, but I feel like Darius is now so well-rounded. The unexpected Act 3, his turn at the end of Act 2, the way he behaved toward the hero, the Rook, not the chess piece, the Rook, the hero, the Rook at the end, when he rebelled against defending the status quo as a hero, all of that makes me think that Darius is like a completely three-dimensional character now that I would love to read more about.
I love that piece of feedback because I think a long time ago, I'm not sure what episode it was, but we were talking about me portraying NPCs, and you gave me a piece of feedback that cut me to the core. Not really, but it was a great piece of feedback that changed how I think about a lot of things. And you said, I played all of my NPCs kind of the same, that they were all a little snarky, a little smarmy. They were hip with it, you know, and they're trying to, they're objective based. And that really struck me. And my goal with, you tell me, I mean, does Darius feel different than NPCs I've ran in the past?
Darius, you were playing someone younger and more inexperienced, truly coming of age, and no longer wanting to be a hero from the outside in, from the costume in, from the following on social media in, from the reputation in, and instead he moved toward being a hero from the inside out.
Wow.
And I think that was a huge shift. That's why I'm so much more interested in Darius now.
Yeah, I thank you for that feedback. That's really, that's so much more profound than even my intent was, obviously. But that's a great, like, kind of setup arc for a character, right? I couldn't have planned an arc that good, I guess I'll say. And that's the magic of playing, of me playing one character and you playing the world. So
yeah, we had to bounce off each other to arrive at this. I never could have come up with anything
this
deep.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, Mutants and Masterminds, I want you to rate the system and your experience with the system on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of prepping and running.
Yes, I'm going to make those two separate ratings.
Okay.
I would rate the system an 8. I think it's a good system. I think every time we played, we had fun, hard to pull off. I think every time we played, the mechanics were pretty bulletproof in terms of the game has an answer for what you're trying to do. I think we've talked before about it's a game about making characters, and it achieves that beautifully. So I think the system itself is an 8. I think it shows its age. It's based on the OGL, and it really seems to mirror a lot of the 4th edition stuff, except for the reliance on the grid. But I like it better than 4th edition D&D.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
I do. I think the system is an 8. My experience with the system is about a 5. And that's on me, not on the system. Not every system is for every person. I think there's probably better hero games now. I really want to play Steve Kinson's Icons now that we've played Steve Kinson's Mutants and Masterminds. See if it is a little more modern in its sensibilities and like easier math, easier to wrap my head around. But I think my experience with it is, even though the game has an answer for everything, the adding the 10, the adding the 15, the knowing, like you had difficulty knowing which roles have degrees of success and which roles don't.
Yeah, I agree. That's partially, you know, I could always be a better player and research that stuff and be more well-prepared. But I feel like I would give the system maybe like a 5 as well. Like, I don't need 10 more sessions of this. Like, I think the system is a lot of adding 10s and 5s. And I wonder if that dynamic would feel different if we had 4 people at the table instead of just 2. Yeah. So would you play the system again?
No. And which sucks because I have 4 DC Heroes books, all 4 DC Heroes, which is based on Mutants and Masterminds 3rd edition. I probably have 6 or 7 Mutants and Masterminds 3rd edition books, and I never want to play it ever again.
You hear that, listeners? Make Dusty an offer. He's looking
for your...
Yeah. So is it just that you feel like you know what you need to know about the system, and you're more interested in playing supers in a different system?
It is. Like, I know what the system's about. If you're trying really hard to make the perfect character with the perfect mechanics to express your vision of that character, then my friends, this is the system for you. Mm-hmm. If you are a 42-year-old working professional with a kid and very little time, then my friend, this is not the system for you, or at least not for me. So I'm personally done with it. But I enjoyed aspects of it so much that I am so eager to play. If we ever do Darius again, it's going to be in Steve Kinson's Icons.
I was just about to propose that. I would love to pick up this character again and kind of remake him in Icons and continue the story from there. I think that'd be cool.
That would be neat.
Yeah. Anything else that you want to talk about this session three or in terms of the arc of the whole game?
Do you feel satisfied with the journey that Darius went on in sessions 1, 2, and 3? And do you feel like we ended in a good place story-wise?
100%. I think that me starting from this like local hero, I mean, going to Amnesty Park and trying to go into the actual carnival and then kind of being on the run for session 2 and then joining up in session 3. I feel like that was an awesome arc. I think trying out a new system, I will say that like this has totally changed my opinion. I would want to run more narrative systems at least 3 sessions to get an idea of what they are. Because my idea of the game and character at the end of number 3 is different than it was at the end of number 1.
Again, I enjoyed it. I didn't hate it at all. The system itself gets an 8. I just give it a 5 for my personal experience. What would you have done differently if you were GMing me or like someone else one-on-one in Mutants and Masterminds on an arc like this?
Knowing what I know now about the system, I think that a lot of the foibles that we ran into were due to it being a one-on-one game, kind of like what I talked about, and being a glass cannon. So I would maybe urge my players to build a certain way and kind of steer them away from the extreme, like high damage, low toughness type of characters. But I would also say, you know what, you're going to be adventuring alone. Be well-rounded. Also, you know what I would do? I would make them part of a team, and I would use this hero point tag-in mechanic that we did from session 1. I think it's awesome when Spider-Man is fighting somebody and then Wolverine comes in to help him. It's like, oh, cool, crossover moment. Like, basically using hero points as more generic get-out-of-jail-free cards for when your character gets into trouble. And then just turn up that combat difficulty up even another hair just so they feel like they've got to engage with those.
There must be a sidekick mechanic. As thorough as this game is in its mechanics, there is not one in the basic Heroes Handbook that I'm holding. I have the Deluxe Heroes Handbook over on the shelf along with like 18 other books. That's a great point. If this system has a sidekick mechanic, that would, I think, fix a lot of the one-on-one combat swinginess stuff.
Yeah. And it would give you more. If you let that player control the sidekick and kind of decide who they are, I think that even adds more to the player expression, which is like the best part of this game, I think, in terms of mechanical and like narrative player expression. Like that's, I think, the real highlight of this game for me. And having a sidekick or a tag team like Marvel versus Capcom or something to tag in, that'd be awesome.
So a couple more questions to finish this out. First of all, rate the trilogy of games 1 to 10 and then rate this last session 1 to 10 or reverse that order if you like.
I'll give the trilogy a 7 out of 10, which is positive for me. That's not a C. A 5 was average on my scale. And then this last session, I would give an 8. I love everything that happened narratively in it, but like I said, I did have some critiques about the mechanical flow of not only the game, but also the way that you designed the session. You know, you kind of gave me a direct look under the hood as to what you were running GM to GM, like we talked about. But I guess I learned when I'm the player, I want you to wrap that in chocolate, you know, sneak it in, try and make it a little bit more realized. But that's really my only dings against the session. Otherwise, everything that happened, the characters, the encounters were all interesting and iconic and cool. And the ending was awesome. So you get an 8 out of 10 for this, 7 out of 10 overall. I think session 2 is my least favorite. If I had to give it, I think I would give it, I don't know what I rated that one, but I'd give that one like a 6 or 7 and then session 1, probably like a 7 or 8.
Got it. Yeah. I appreciate that. Last question. Superhero. So forget Mutants and Masterminds, the superhero genre, our conversation during the game around, hey, 3 panels of this and the 3rd panel does this, or hey, in this panel, this is silhouetted and we see this, the superhero genre, interested in more of that or interested in like taking a lengthy break? What do you think about the superhero genre?
I would be interested in more. I know it's such a large part of the RPG genre experience, right? like, I think probably fantasy games is pretty fair to say are like number one in popularity. And then maybe sci-fi and supernatural horror type of games are up there too. But Supers has got to be in the top five type of games that I think people want and buy and play, don't you think?
It must be.
It must be. There's so many Supers games. So I would love to do that again. I've always wanted to try Masks, but I don't know if Powered by the Apocalypse games about character development are going to be super great without a group. Yeah, I mean, I'm still interested in, despite my fatigue with superhero movies and merchandise and things like that, I think the comics are cool. I think the stories are cool. It's just this format is so much more engaging to me. If I'm going to be thinking about superheroes, you know, this is where I want to do it, or in Marvel versus Capcom, not in on a movie screen.
That's fair. I feel a bunch the same way. I think superheroes was a wonderful palate cleanser that I would be willing to do again in a different system.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any additional closing thoughts?
No, just I guess we can get to some lessons learned. I got one or two in mind if you got one.
Oh, yes. Why don't you go first?
It is the name of the show, after all. I think we should do it.
That is fair. I was going to skip it.
Lesson learned number one, play your game for three sessions. I think we both had a better, more well-realized opinion, unless it's like offensively bad that everyone was like, God, I don't want to play this at all anymore. Obviously, don't make your friends waste their precious time on that. But if you're like figuring out a game and you're not really sure where you're landing on it, play it a couple times. Play those games that you've had on the shelf that you never did. Get them to the table. That's when the good stuff happens.
That's good. Know what the system's about. This system is about creating your exact superhero. If I wanted to answer the question, who would win in a fight? Superman, or I don't know, who's someone in the Marvel universe who's almost as powerful as Superman, or the Incredible Hulk,
Captain Marvel, or something.
Yeah, well, that's also DC, but oh, you mean Captain Marvel, the Brie Larson Captain Marvel? Yeah. Yes, fair enough. So, I was thinking of Shazam. If I wanted to do this cross genre, which hero's better, I would make both heroes in the system, and I would have them duke it out, and I would feel like I'd be able to answer that question. If that interests you, this is the system for you. So whenever you engage with a new system, know what it's trying to do. BXD&D is survival horror. 4E D&D is tactical combat. 5E D&D is like high fantasy superheroic combat. Know what the system that you're engaging is so that you know what to expect, how to run, and how to think about it.
And then if I would say a third one, you know the dynamic between a player and a GM, or a GM and a GM, or a player and a player. You know, there's different ways to show up to the table and talk to people. And if I'm showing up as a player, I want Dusty to lay out the red carpet for me and immerse me in his world of imagination. I don't need to hear about the behind the scenes necessarily.
We all deserve to be wooed as a player sometimes. Yes,
exactly.
Fair enough.
Yep. Well, that was Mutants and Masterminds. So I guess we've made a pact that we're going to play more in this world, at least. I'm curious to see how it goes.
Same here. Thank you for listening.
People call them reviews, postmortems, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.